Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Impoga, and this evening we'll talk about the attempt to arrest Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir. And with me here in Studio 9 is my colleague, Vincent Makori, the host of Africa 54. Vincent, welcome back to the show.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you very much. And joining us momentarily is another colleague, Jackson Mufunganyi. He's host of VOA's program Upfront. He'll be joining us momentarily. And joining us from South Africa is a regular panelist and friend of the show, Suleiman Mgula. He's an independent political analyst. He joins us from Durban. Good evening, Suleiman.
Good evening, Douglas and the listeners.
How is Durban?
Very fine.
And we have Jackson Mvunganyi here now. Jackson, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. As I said, gentlemen, our topic tonight is the attempt to arrest Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir. Omar al-Bashir attended the African Union Summit in Johannesburg, South Africa, over the weekend. And he flew out of a private jet on Monday, in spite of having a travel ban, while the judges at the Pretoria High Court examined the ICC arrest warrant. First of all, less general terms, what do you make of this, Vincent?
Personally, I was not surprised that there will be so much talk about Bashir attending. I was not surprised at all that there was an attempt by a court to have him arrested, and I was not surprised at all that he wasn't arrested, because there's no question that Bashir was not going to South Africa without a guarantee from the South African authority and other African leaders that he will not be arrested. He is aware that he generates a lot of excitement every time he gets out of his country. And he is aware that there are people who would like to see him arrested, humiliated, and sent to the ICC. He does not just hop onto that plane and go to any other African country without having prepared everything that needs to be done to make sure that he comes back home safely. What for me surprised me that some people really expected him to be arrested and spend a lot of valuable time talking about it instead of really focusing on things that I think of a more importance and urgency to Africans on the continent.
I was surprised, honestly, unlike Vincent, I was surprised that it went this far. I have to give it up for the South African, you know, system, judicial system, and the judges who have the guts to, who had the guts to try and detain him, but also the government prosecutor, or the prosecutor who took the case to court and tried to have him arrested in South Africa. I do not know that he knew the extent to which they would take it. Like Vincent said, there must have been an agreement, a tacit agreement between, you know, Sudan and the government of South Africa, that if he comes in, that he's safe to come in and leave. And he's been traveling all over the continent. There have been calls each time he travels for him to be arrested from, you know, member countries who are signatories to the ICC. But I don't think it has ever come to this level where we almost felt that it's actually going to happen. Now, I was under no illusion that he was going to be arrested, just like Vincent said. But, you know, as a person who follows, you know, the politics on the continent and knows some of, you know, followed the atrocities that he committed in Darfur, I felt like, you know, if you know, if he was humiliated, then good, well and good enough. If that's the worst punishment he will ever get for what he has done in Darfur.
Okay, you know, we will delve into those atrocities and related factors. Let me first go to Suleiman in Durban. What does this do to the South African government? Attempting to arrest a sitting head of state, a fellow club member of AU, and then getting criticism from the other people who say, well, as a signatory to ICC, they ought to have done more to arrest him.
Actually, what my colleagues have said, it is just a storm in a teacup. What we have to understand is that South Africa is a democratic country. There are a lot of there is an active civil society. The case was put in place by civil society groups, and the courts are independent. They had to oblige, and the courts, the nature of the courts The courts don't make law. The courts interpret law. It depends on which court has been given the case, and it depends on which judge has handled the case.
Mm.
Otherwise, to sum it all, the way my colleagues have seen, it was an exaggerated affair, because the way they have put it, the Bashir case is not yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
This is not the first country Bashir has come to on the African continent. He was in Kenya, he was in Chad, he was in Nigeria. Above all, he has even gone international. In 2011, he was in China, and he was met by the Chinese government.
Mm-hmm.
Above all, the Prime Minister, the President himself met him. So what was so difficult about him being in South Africa? And over and above, the way my colleagues have put it, the South African government was exercising its sovereign right to allow an AU conference to take place on its soil.
Mm-hmm.
And an AU conference comes with a baggage. There are some preconditions like any other international conferences like the UN,
mm-hmm.
whereby, specifically speaking, leaders have got immunity. So you could not expect a sovereign country to arrest another sovereign country. So it is an exaggerated case. It was a storm in a teacup, and we never expected that it could be done, especially those of us who are well aware of what is going on nationally, internationally.
I see. Now, gentlemen, there's this other broader problem for the International Criminal Court. The huge levels of skepticism and outright lack of trust the court now has among African leaders, and some extent even the general public. Now, with this, with al-Bashir going away with this, I'll pass through this one around the table. What position now has ICC got on the continent?
ICC got a lot of support from the continent from its inception, more than from any other place. We know that, for example, the United States is not even a signatory of ICC.
Mm-hmm.
Now, progressively, the Africans have come to perceive this court as a court that targets only Africans. Up to this point, the only people who've been brought to the ICC, who've been indicted before the ICC, are Africans. And people looking around, I've seen leaders across the world who they can clearly identify as war criminals, as people who have committed gross human rights violations as leaders.
Mm-hmm.
That is, whether they send their armies to fight in places where they shouldn't have, where human atrocities have been committed. But they haven't seen ICC pursue any of this. And Africans are progressively feeling that the court looks at it as its mission as almost that of solely pursuing African leaders, not to excuse them from all the things and bad things they've done. But I think that is the perception that is growing, and that is making many more people become more skeptical about its purpose and also its objectives. Some have seen it as political, and therefore, and some have seen it as being influenced actually by the West, our external forces that have some agenda on the continent. And so I think it is losing credibility, and unfortunately it's going to become again a disadvantage to Africans who cannot get any justice on the continent,
anywhere,
who have the only hope in an international court, just like the Hague or the special one that was formed by for
Rwanda,
the case of Rwanda and even Sierra Leone. So it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate, but I think it's losing credibility.
Let's be clear here. I honestly feel like the people who say that the ICC is targeting only Africans are either African leaders themselves who have come under indictment by the ICC.
Wait a minute,
or people who are allied to some of these leaders.
Wait a minute, Jackson.
Okay?
Some have pointed out these facts.
Mm.
Now, one of the nine situations the court is officially investigating, all are in Africa.
Right.
Every one of the 32 individuals indicted by the court so far are African.
Right.
Clearly, that does seem
but
some
all,
as...
But all those cases were referred to the ICC by African governments,
mm-hmm.
by African leaders.
Mm-hmm.
The ICC did not, except in the case of Bashir, which the United Nations Security Council referred to the ICC.
Of which three members are not members of the court.
Exactly. But all these cases that you see before the ICC, or the majority of them, were brought by the governments
right.
that are signatory. Now, when you hear this outright calling the ICC racist, is coming after, you know, Africans, and that it's a political tool by the West, are they targeting people who are not doing anything wrong? No. Now, if you can argue and say, why are they not going, as Vincent said, why are they not going after other leaders, Western leaders, who have seemingly committed atrocities? Mm. But, you know, and many of these leaders are not signatory to the ICC. Number two is there have not been any cases that have been referred to the ICC by any interested parties to try and get these leaders. But the cases before the ICC right now, all of them are brought by African governments. In fact, sitting presidents. Uganda recently, which was the latest, and we've had a lot of calls from Uganda criticizing the ICC. Uganda recently referred to a case of I think a former LRA rebel commander to the ICC. And then they go on the other side and start criticizing the ICC. I mean, you cannot have your cake and eat it too. You know, I feel they're also trying to use it as a tool to repress their people, or in a way also to kind of bring to justice to people that they feel that have been fighting the systems that they had. Mm-hmm. And it's unfair. It's unjust if you look at it, you know, in both ways.
Mm-hmm. Suleiman, what's your take on this?
Yeah, I think what we've come to appreciate right now progressively is that from the precedents which we have got, it is becoming clear that, yes, the ICC is the right instrument, but there was some error of judgment. Number one, there was some error of judgment in the aspects of the aspects of the statute. Because number one, it is morally, it is practically difficult and morally wrong to arrest a sitting head of state, because a sitting head of state has got two capacities. He has got his own personal capacity, and then he has got the capacity of a nation. Mm-hmm. He's the embodiment of a nation. Much as he may have carried out atrocities, when he's a sitting head of state, he's an embodiment of the nation. By arresting him, you are criminalizing the whole nation. So that was an error. It is not wrong to run after them, but they were supposed to be a situation where they have to be followed after they have left power, so that they are followed in their personal capacities. Because, number two, those who are supposed to effect the arrest are fellow heads of state. The sheriffs of the ICC are the heads of state. And then there is an international convention where every nation, it is sacrosanct to protect a sovereign nation. You cannot interfere into. You have to respect any other sovereign nation as a state. Mm-hmm. So you find that since the sheriffs of the ICC are supposed to be governments of nations, it will be very difficult for them to arrest the other fellow heads of state. The other problem which we have, where it has been crafted, where people are coming up with a criticism about targeting Africans, is also an error of judgment also, in the sense that, let's not call it an error of judgment, but let's say it is the unfair manner, or what appears to be unfair targeting of some individuals and then leave other individuals. Because some individuals who are friends, some big powers in internationally, they are followed. A person like Bashir, who has got fewer friends, is pursued, but then others who have got friends, for example, we all know that Israel had a 50 days war in Gaza, and really those atrocities which were committed there qualify very well to be investigated by the international court, as it were. But because they are friends of some big powers, they are not followed with vigor the way Bashir is followed with vigor. I'm sure that is why African countries, they should have put it that the countries, which the smaller countries or countries which have got no friends, no big friends, no godfathers, they are the ones which are followed vigorously, whereas those who have got godfathers, they are left to move. and attended to.
Okay, Bashir, of course, has been traveling, as most of you have pointed out. But then there is the unique difference between the only two African heads of state who have been indicted by the ICC before. That's Bashir and President Kenyatta, who for him, unlike Bashir, went head-on and went to the ICC until the case was thrown out. So should Bashir have done the same thing? Or maybe for Bashir, it's
I think perhaps for Bashir it's different. I can speak very confidently about Kenyatta's situation because from the get-go, I think the case was poorly done. For those of us who know what exactly happened in Kenya, we knew that there was no evidence against Uhuru Kenyatta. People may say all they like about, or perhaps they interfered with this or they interfered with that, but the evidence was poorly collected. The charges were based on just some assumptions, not exactly what happened. If you look at what they wanted to kind of pin Kenyatta to, what kind of evidence, which was that he financed a particular militia group to go and kill. The story, if you know how the story went, there's no way you can trace whatever finances to that group, or rather from that group to Kenyatta. So Kenyatta was so confident because he knew there is no evidence that can stick, that can prove that he committed any of those crimes or he was behind the commission of those crimes. I think in the case of Bashir has, he kind of feels that because he doesn't enjoy as many, first, he doesn't enjoy friendship from so many people around the world. And the issue of Darfur was a clear war against civilians by the sitting president, as opposed to Uhuru Kenyatta, who was being associated with crimes as a, not as the president of a country. He was actually at that time
a candidate.
He wasn't even a candidate. Remember, that was Mwai Kibaki running for presidents when the elections went the way they went. Uhuru Kenyatta was not even a sitting president at that time. In the case of Bashir, he was a president of a country. He waged war against civilians in Darfur. The evidence is impeccable. There's no question about it. It is directly linked to him. He ordered the massacre of civilians. So for him, he knows the evidence is very strong.
Yes.
He cannot present himself to the ICC.
But then on that note, Jackson, if there are many African sitting heads of state in Africa who have blood on their hands, who are being accused of committing atrocities, the UN reports implicated some East African leaders in the mess in DR Congo.
But there's no case that has been brought against them before the ICC.
That's exactly the point I'm trying to make. Some observers have pointed out why pick out some few atrocities and pin one leader and leave the rest unchallenged.
Again, because nobody has really come up with any cases. If you have a case against a sitting president or a past president for committing atrocities and it's a strong case, then take it to the ICC. If they don't follow up, then you can accuse them for not having follow up, for nitpicking. Okay, but I agree with Vincent. I think for Bashir, as opposed to other presidents or other cases, there was a stronger case here, but also there was also this appeal. The Darfur story was bigger than just Sudan. It appealed to us, and it's been ongoing for so many years, and just the scale at which it was carried out is so immense that it was very hard to ignore. And that Bashir keeps continuing to flout international law and kill his people as it's been alleged, or at least been confirmed, is you know, preposterous, at least for the that he's able to still continue to be an African president.
I see.
Now let me just touch on one of the arguments that is made by people who are against the ICC, who say that we need an African court. A court that is best in Africa and with African judges, that and then that way we'll not feel that they're coming, after our people. But then, let's say they create an alternative court system or judicial system in Africa. How many presidents do you think they'll come after?
Well, they're members of the club.
Exactly. Yes. Most of these people cannot even condemn another leader when they're trying to change the constitution, or when they're killing their own people, in broad daylight. They're in cahoots in many of these things.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from here in Washington. Our topic tonight, we're discussing the failed attempt to arrest Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir, and our panelists are my colleagues, Vincent Makori and Jackson Mvunganyi, and we're also joined by Suleiman Mugula, a South African-based independent political analyst, and I'm your host, Douglas Impoga, here in Studio 9. Now, Suleiman, this issue, because you see, what most observers see is that there are lots of issues on the continent. It's not for lack of... People are not saying people like Bashir are angels or they didn't maybe commit these things. It's about the fairness. Because as we saw in the case of DRC, many more people perished directly or indirectly because of the war than did in Darfur. And nothing was done. We have seen recently in other countries across the continent. So is it a matter of fairness or what is it about?
That is where we have to re-examine the ICC itself, or where the ICC has to make an introspection. Because the way you have put it, yes, my colleagues have said there is incontrovertible evidence about Bashir, but remember, Bashir is accused to have gone away with about 300,000 people. The DRC we are talking of, 4 million, close to 4 million. Until recently, the M23 supported by Uganda and Rwanda was still mowing down people in the DRC. As we speak, Uganda is in southern Sudan. They are making the conflict worse and worse. There are people dying, there are people suffering. Who will determine? Again, as we have said, not only the people of Central African Republic. I mean, do you need, if not only the Central African Republic, Burundi, the president is ready to send soldiers to shoot people during broad daylight. Nobody. Who is going to take these people to ICC, as my colleague is saying? It is the ICC itself to find a mechanism where it can intervene in these places, whether it doesn't doesn't arrest them when they are sitting. But files should be opened up by the ICC so that we know that the moment they leave power, justice will be done. So there is still unfairness as far as the ICC is concerned. It needs to do an introspection. And there is no doubt whatsoever that those countries, those leaders, those dictators who are friends, who are allies of the United States of America, they are not touched. Mm-hmm. But those who are not friends of America, they are the ones who are being followed.
Before that, also include where you think this leaves the ICC. For as long as they don't have powers of arrest on the continent, how effective are they going to be?
And actually, that is what was on my mind. I think the ICC, the intention was good. Africa needed an ICC, and Africa needs a court like the ICC. But the structure of the ICC will not succeed in achieving the objectives. The structure of the ICC will not necessarily help the African countries achieve that sense of justice at the international level. Because, as you say, how many presidents is the ICC able to arrest? How realistic is it that you can actually arrest the people who commit atrocities? The only successful situations have been where governments present small actors, rebel groups. But to target like presidents of nations while they're sitting, you don't have the capacity to do it. You cannot fly into Kenya or to Uganda and arrest the president.
Even get evidence.
Exactly. Even collect evidence in that country. You cannot rely on that president one day traveling elsewhere. How about if that president decides, like President Jomo Kenyatta, our first president in Kenya, never traveled out of the country, not because of having committed anything, but he just never traveled until he died. So if you're going to wait for that, it will never happen. What I'm thinking is that, their only hope for Africa is that someday there will be a strong sense of justice on the continent, where within countries themselves, there will be a fight to ensure that people can get justice within their countries, within their regions. And at the international level, they'll have to review the ICC. It's important and necessary to have an international court that at least can handle some of these issues, but you have to have some kind of review and restructuring of this court so that you know what is the extent of its powers and what are the limitations and therefore what is the hope of justice. Otherwise, what is the point of having a case that will run for the next 30 years and eventually perhaps you are not even able to apprehend that person and charge them? It's a waste of money. It's a waste of time.
And another thing, people, as we wind up, Jackson, there's this element where many powerful countries are not signatories to ICC.
Right.
So that renders it a bit imbalanced.
Absolutely. I agree with you. I would love to see the US and other major powers sign on to the ICC because it would make it stronger.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that's going to happen very soon. On the other hand, the presence of the ICC, for me, I feel like it's some sort of... if there's a level of deterrence in any way by its existence to kind of deter leaders on the continent running roughshod and killing their own people. If it's able to achieve that, then let it stay. Like Vincent said, I would love for them to stop killing their own people.
I see.
You feel like there's a sense of justice in your country where you live in peace and security. People just want to live free without being killed because they have a different, you disagree.
Hold on, Suleiman. Suleiman, we didn't get to you. You're running through Jackson. Someone said Jackson. What are we saying?
Oh, I was saying, to put it the other way around the world, how international is the International Court of Justice? Because some of these big powers are not part of the court.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier to be international when you have countries like America, like China, excluding themselves. So these are the countries which would have helped to enforce some of these decisions. But the very fact that they excluded themselves, they dilute the effectiveness of the court. That is why any case which is being referred to is either blocked at the UN Security Council level. For example, you saw the Syrian issue. When it tried to go, Russia blocked it. So they keep on blocking one another. So the court is rendered ineffective because...
Okay, in a word or two, what do you see as the future of ICC? Do you see it with the future or not?
First of all, it has to be a fully-fledged international court, meaning that all the big powers have to be a party to the court.
I see.
So that we can have full backing of all the big powers. At the moment, either they sabotage, or they protect, or they don't give backing to something.
Okay.
By them not backing it, it is rendered ineffective. Number two, the other small powers, like we, the African continent, now we have got to doubt about it because the major powers don't seem to care.
Okay. Vicent, one word, what do you see as the future? Does it have a future or not?
There is a future, but a very complicated future. It will take a long time before we figure out.
The ISIS is not going away anytime soon. But is it effective? Is it going to get more effective? I don't think so either. Unless there are people, stronger parties that sign on to it, unless there's more of a buy-in from the continent, because this whole thing that is hanging over its head, that it's coming after Africans, essentially made it ineffective as a credible institution that would serve justice.
I see. Well, that's all the time we have for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our panel, my colleagues, Vincent Makori, host of Africa 54, and Jackson Mvunganyi, host of Upfront, and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst based in South Africa. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the show.
It's been a pleasure.
You're welcome.
Our producer also has been Jackson Mvunganyi. Our engineer tonight was Pete Handley. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that in case you missed any part of this program, you can still access it by going to our main website at www.voanews.com. Click on Programs and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable, and you can listen to the whole program again. You can also drop us a line. Our email is reporters@voanews.com. Once again, thanks very much for tuning in. Until next week, I'm your host, Douglas Simpoga, in Washington, wishing you a very, very good evening.